Hello, I'm Michelle Grattan and welcome to the Conversations Politics podcast from Canberra. Today we're speaking to new Labor Senator and former New South Wales Labor State Secretary Sam Dastyari about his transition into Parliament. He had some strong ideas about how Labor should conduct its debate over the next 3 years, and he wants to be a player in that debate. Sam Dastyari, a few months ago you were saying you were not ready to enter Parliament yet, that you still had too much to do in reforming the New South Wales ALP. What changed your mind when the casual vacancy came up?
Look, I think the big thing that changed my mind is the inevitability of the fact that we're going to lose the last federal election, and the fact that there is this huge challenge. It's almost like, Michelle, to be honest, almost a crisis facing the Australian centre-left, about where we go, about what we do, about how do we ideologically rebuild ourselves. And I wanted to be part of that. That is the big debate at the moment. And that's the big debate that people in the Labor Party need to engage in.
And you feel you're best placed in the Parliament to do
that? Well, look, I think that's where this debate's going to be carried out. I mean, we lost the last election. And I think the Labor Party and Parliament starts sitting again very soon, and people are only still starting to come to grips with the fact that there was a seismic event that happened, and that is a second-term Labor government got resoundingly thrown out by the Australian people, and they threw us out because they felt that our agenda and our values and what we're pushing forward wasn't what they wanted. Now, there's two parts to this. There's a lot of people that want to talk about the past, talk about what happened, the infighting, the division. I thought George Wright, the National Secretary, outlined all the factors that caused to where we got to in his press club address. But there's also this other question, which now says, where do we go from here? What do we do? What's the Labor Party about ideologically? What do we want to be about? And I think there's going to be a pretty robust and frank debate the Labor Party is going to have internally about ideology.
Now, just before we get to that, going to where you've been, you were much involved, obviously, in the campaign. How do you think the actual campaign was run?
I thought the logistics of the campaign were fantastic. Take New South Wales, right? In New South Wales, we were told that we were going to get wiped out in Western Sydney. We were told that Lindsay, and not just seats like Lindsay and Reid, and marginal seats on the Central Coast that we unfortunately lost were the seats we're going to lose. We were told that Blaxland, Watson, Fowler, Chifley, McMahon, all these Labor seats in Western Sydney was going to be a wipeout, and we hung on to all of them. I think the logistics, and this is the difference, the Labor Party is fantastic when it comes to campaign logistics. In New South Wales, you have this amazing team, the incoming party secretary, Jamie Clements, the assistant secretary, Callum Manane. They ran an amazing on-the-ground operation. But what killed us wasn't our tactics. It wasn't how good we are at getting campaign material or making the case on the doorstep with the material we have. What killed us was the product. And I think we did an outstanding job in the circumstances that we had to hang on to the furniture, particularly in Sydney and also in Brisbane as well. But you have to start asking yourself, okay, we got the lowest primary vote in a century. And why did that happen? How did that happen? How can we make sure that never happens again? We can't rely on the fact that, we're very, very good at campaigning and we have amazing campaigners. That's not going to be a substitute for what actually has to be hard policy working around what our ideology is going to be about.
So fundamentally, what was wrong with the product?
Well, I think to take a step back, Michelle, I think what happened was we failed to address what's actually going out there in the suburbs, what people are feeling, what families are feeling, and I think we failed to grasp as a government and realise the pressures that everybody's under. We became a show that was too much talking about ourselves, too much focused on ourselves. It was all about the Labor Party. It was all about our own careers. It was all about, leadership and internal division. And instead of being about what the public was crying out for it to be about, which is about them and what's going on, I mean, Michelle.
But you did have schools out there, you had disability out there.
Michelle, there's something wrong out there in the Australian condition. We're getting healthier, we're getting wealthier, we're living for longer. And every socioeconomic indicator, things are getting better and better. And it's, but at the same time, everyone's under so much pressure. They're under time pressure. They're under financial pressure. They're under social pressure. And that's meaning that, you know, as a society, we're making these increasingly illogical decisions. You know, we're traveling further to get to work. We're working for longer hours. We're placing ourselves under this incredible stress. And I think the last Labor government, in some areas, was getting it right. And we got the fact that people, you know, to ease some of the pressures, you've got to start addressing schooling, you've got to start addressing childcare. But we weren't able to build that into an overall narrative. And the narrative needs to be around quality of life. If the Labor Party gets itself trapped in the next couple of years solely in a cost of living debate, we will lose. We will lose. But what we need to be out there arguing, and what I'm certainly going to focus my career on arguing, is this idea that there is, you know, there's a quality of life debate, and we have to be frank with the Australian people and be able to tell them, you know, we can give you improved services, we can take some of these pressures off, but we're also going to have to pay for it. And fundamentally, at the heart of where the Libs ran with the last election was a lie. They ran with this whole idea that you can have a services-based agenda, like the one Labor was promoting, without a tax base to pay for it. And the truth is, we on the economics struggled to pay for it with the tax base we had. To start removing that and to be able to argue that you're going to be able to keep these services isn't going to stand. And the Labor Party has to use this period in opposition to go out there and make this argument that, you know, we can address quality of life issues, we can address some of these pressures, but it comes at a financial cost, and that's going to mean building a tax base that can actually pay for it.
But doesn't that take us fairly quickly to the whole GST debate and the need to look at increasing or broadening or both that tax?
The problem with the GST, the problem with increasing the GST is just how inequitable it is. You know, I mean, if you wanted to have a debate about increasing the GST, the problem is that the people it hits hardest, the people it hits most, are those on kind of lower income. It's actually not a fair way of doing it. I think there are better ways of doing it.
So what bits of the tax base would be fairer?
Well, I think where we were heading towards with you know, kind of the mining tax, I think that needs to be re-looked at. I think there's a way of doing that better. I think some of these areas with higher kind of income earners, I think there is space there at the moment.
Superannuation?
Well, look, I think all of this, you know, I think some of that will need to get looked at. But I think firstly, the first step in this is actually making this argument that you actually have to have these services. And until you can make that argument, sure, you can get trapped very quickly in politics and the whole what tax you're going to rule in, what tax you're going to rule out. I think that the mistake we made was we didn't make the case, I think, well enough about why we need to have, you know, to be able to release some of these pressures that people are under, why you need to have these services and how government's going to pay for them. Look, there's some big ideas out there. You know, take this idea of universal childcare. This is the next big idea. The next big idea is going to be this idea that, hang on, you've got all these private suppliers of childcare. You've got some that are being run by local governments and councils. But at what point do we decide as a society, you know, everyone's under so much pressure. This whole idea of raising children has become so difficult. At what point do we turn around and say, okay, let's actually start looking at some big ideas like government-funded childcare, like a universal childcare system, and how are we going to pay for it? Is that going to mean a new levy? Is that going to mean a new tax? And I think what we demonstrated and where NDIS really worked was this idea that if you go out there and make the case in the community that you can deliver these kinds of services, people are prepared to pay for them. But you have to win that debate. And we get ourselves trapped in this cost of living frame. And it's not just financial pressure that people are under. It's not as if, you know, you go out to the suburbs of Sydney, yes, they're under financial pressure, but they're also under an incredible amount of social pressure. They're under an incredible amount of time pressure. And what they're really saying, what they're crying out for, is for somebody to start kind of alleviating some of that.
Do you think that the Labor Party will be willing to go back to some of these really fundamental issues, or will the pressure be on the politicians to paper over differences, not to really have an honest debate about things?
Well, I don't think we have a choice but to. I mean, look, the last time the Labor Party really asked itself, what is the ideological agenda? What are we here to achieve? I think was really in that kind of late 60s, pre-Whitlam era. You know, I mean, to take some of your listeners back to some of the history, you know, there was the genuine battles between your Cairnses of the world, and so Jim Cairns and your Gough Whitlams, where the Labor Party at that point decided we wanted to be a party of government. And we wanted to actually, because, you know, at that point we've been out of power for 23 years. So people were quite happy with this whole idea that we're going to be a universal, you know, kind of opposition party that'll march down the streets. Whitlam said we want to be a Labor government, a party of government, and he outlined some big ideas. And the Whitlam era and the Hawke-Keating era really was the Labor Party delivering on that agenda from that late 60s. You know, four big things: universal healthcare. You know, this whole idea that, you know, we can all know that we're going to have a decent healthcare system that the state's going to provide. You know, the Americans have torn themselves up over Obamacare. Obamacare is one-tenth of what the Medicare system is. A savings base for the nation in the form of superannuation. Equality of opportunity when it comes to education. Yeah, you know, from time to time you need things like Gonski to make it more equitable. But the basic principle that you can go to a public school or a private school and you can become a doctor, a nurse, a teacher, whatever you want to be, based on ability, you know, that's kind of unique to Australia. And finally, multiculturalism. The fact that someone like myself, you know, I was born in Iran. You know, I came to Australia when I was 5 during the Iran-Iraq War. Can have all this incredible opportunity. That a lot of that came from that Whitlam era, and the Hawke-Keating government really delivered on the Whitlam promise because they got the economics right, and they brought the Australian public with them. I think what we did wrong in that last government has to actually, in a way, almost go back to that period of opposition. From 1996 to 2007, we didn't answer the big question about why do we want to be in power. So the problems that emanated post-2007, the seeds were laid a lot earlier than that. You know, we went to the 2007 election defining ourselves as not being Howard. You know, what did we really take to that election with us? We said we're going to abolish work choices because Howard supported it, that we were going to ratify Kyoto because Howard wouldn't, that we were going to, you know, apologise to the stolen generation because Howard wouldn't. And then within that, there was a couple of things about an education revolution, which was trying to demonstrate we're the future and he's the past. They were all really good things, but they were based on Howard. Where we have to go to now, Michelle, is being able to use this period of opposition to be able to say, right, it's not just about not being Abbott. Of course, the Abbott will do things we will hate. We'll go to this election and saying, we're not going to be this, we're not going to be that. But we're not conservatives, we're progressives. And for progressives, you have to have big ideas. And if we're going to win, we have to ask ourselves two questions. How do we win? Which is that tactical question. What do we want power for? And I think if we're able to answer those two things, I think we can keep this to a very short government. But at this stage, that's the dual challenge.
Now, one of the questions that the party will be grappling with over the next 3 years will be its position on carbon pricing. Are you comfortable with the decision to oppose the repeal of the carbon tax?
Oh, I think we have to, Michelle. I really do. I think you can't be a party of principle. You can't have argued the way we argued and how we argued on carbon tax. On putting a price on carbon and the many variations of that talk, ETS. I mean, there's so many different variations of the same principle that you can get muddled up in words and acronyms. But yeah, no, I am very strongly of the view that we need to oppose repealing it in the Senate because you have to send a message that you're about something.
And the ETS should be part of the toolkit in 2016?
I think it's going to be a toolkit into the future in one form or another and whatever variation it takes. And I think ETS is the most sensible way of doing it.
Now, of course, one of the features of the last few months were big changes in the way of selecting the leader, giving the rank and file party half the say in doing this. And there were various bits and pieces and conditions around those changes. Do you think that this will all survive the next party conference in 2015?
Yes. I mean, I've been on the record being a supporter of these measures. Look, I think it will. Obviously, there'll be some tweaking, and there were some elements of it that I think need to get addressed. I think some of the whole how people nominate, how the ballot's conducted, making sure, but there were people, there were some logistical issues. There was
what
people
about in, the 60% required to get a spill of the leadership in opposition?
Yeah, look, I've said on the record previously that perhaps in opposition that should probably be even lowered again to 50. But look, people will have their own views on it, and the Labor Party rightfully will have a debate about the technicalities. And there's other people much better placed than myself to give a debate about the technical rules, and I'm new to the caucus, so I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on what the caucus should or shouldn't do. But I think there is a principle here, and that principle is of participatory democracy, and it works. But there's a danger, and the danger is that we use this as an excuse to not ask ourselves the ideological question. And without harping on about it, I think that we will win or lose the next election because of our policies and ideas, not because of our structure alone. You know, in New South Wales, we did a lot of things over the past few years in structure. We had a huge debate. It resulted in, managed intervention into the branch with the Prime Minister. And all these things happened. And I think they were good things. But at some point, you have to be able to say, look, it is not about us. It is about them. And the people in Western Sydney, the people in Southwest Sydney, the people that Labor's going to rely on, that Bill's going to rely on at the next election, aren't going to walk into polling booths talking about the structure of the Labor Party. They want to know about quality of life. They want to know about what we're going to do with them. Because the Labor Party is so comfortable talking about itself, I really worry that we use the reform debate as a proxy to avoid being able to talk about what we really should be talking about, and that's ideas. And, the danger is if we don't fill that vacuum of ideology, the Labor Party itself is going to go off on fringe issues. And I think that's not a good thing.
One important thing that relates to structure, though, is trying to get a good range of candidates into winnable seats. And the candidate base is pretty narrow at the moment, ex-staffers, ex-party officials, ex-union officials. Would you support an extension of the choosing of candidates, the method of choosing of candidates, say having primaries for all winnable seats?
Well, look, I've been a big fan of primaries in the past. I've advocated for them. I did the first ever trial when I was party secretary in New South Wales.
This is bringing in supporters as well as...
Yeah, allowing other people to have a say. My understanding is, and I don't run the New South Wales branch of the Labor Party, I'm not the party secretary, but my understanding is the New South Wales branch has indicated already that they're going to look at trialling some of this at a state level in 5 winnable seats at the state election. I understand they've actually also outlined a bunch of seats, and these are very winnable seats for Labor, already in the media, seats like Strathfield,
but you don't
Newtown,
have elections
Palmer.
All that often,
no,
so
no,
you only
no,
use
no,
it for
but,
5 seats.
But
it's not
the
much.
Next state election is before the next federal election. I think the New South Wales branch is doing an incredible job under Jamie Clements. I think they're obviously doing a trial. Let's see. I mean, I think it'd be a huge mistake to jump into this without knowing whether it can be effective or not. Look, this may be a future part of the Labor Party toolkit. We're really lucky in New South Wales that we have some pretty outstanding members of Parliament from the New South Wales branch, Anthony Albanese, Tanya Plibersek, Chris Bowen, Tony Burke.
But do you think that you do get too many ex-union officials and party officials?
Well, look, I mean, I'm probably the wrong person to be asking that to, because obviously I'm a former party official myself. I don't think so, and I think in New South Wales, if you look at the quality of the people that have gone in, I mean, Albo, Tanya, Burkey, Bowen, Jason Clare. I mean, it's a seriously talented bunch of people going in from New South Wales. The New South Wales delegation in this parliament is the strongest it's been since the Keating days. And I think that, you have to ask yourself, well, you can ask what's wrong, and you can always have a debate in political parties to search for the perfect, and you can ask what's right. And what's right is this is a branch that's been able to send some pretty outstanding people. And, the fact that, putting aside all the factionalism, the Labor Party, the left and the right in New South Wales have been able to get along so well. And I think the branch in New South Wales at the moment is incredibly good hands and is in an incredibly strong position. You know, the New South Wales, I mean, we just had a by-election for a state seat of Miranda, and we got a 27.5% swing. When I took over as party secretary, weeks afterwards, we had a 25% swing against us in the state seat of Penrith. You know, in a couple of years, the branch has gone from a terrible result to a really strong result. And, you know, I think it's very easy to talk down the New South Wales Labor Party and talk about what went wrong in that last period of state government. But it's under great leadership at the moment.
Well, it was pretty spectacular.
What happened?
Yes.
Yeah, it was. It was. And still, you know, you still hear it going on a daily basis in, you know, ICAC hearings. And, you know, I don't know where all this is going to go. And you keep hearing that there'll be another inquiry into this. Well, no. Look, and, you know, I mean, look, if people have behaved wrongly, they deserve to be, you know, they deserve to be exposed. But I think the branch is in a really strong space. I think there's a real opportunity to pick up seats there at the next federal election. And, you know, Michelle, if I'd have told you that, you know, Lindsay would have been a narrow loss, that we would have won the seat of Greenway, won the seat of Parramatta, that we would have hung on in Werriwa. And, you know, all those kind of what were once safe seats with great MPs like Bowen and Burke and Jason Clare were all going to be held on to. If I told you that before last federal election, you wouldn't have believed me.
Just talking about factionalism federally for a moment, we have seen since the election that the factions are alive and well and very powerful. Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing? Or
well, look, I think it's part of the Labor Party. I think factionalism outside of ideas and outside of values is a very bad thing. I think factionalism as a vehicle for ideas and values is a good thing. I just want to see us, and I guess time will tell, but I want to see us have this debate about ideas, have this debate about values, have this debate that is going to be about people getting together and saying, this is the future of the Labor Party, this is the future of the Australian centre-left. We have a once-in-a-generation opportunity over the next 3 years, and that is to shape what a future Labor government will be, regardless of whether we win or lose the next federal election, and I think we can win. But regardless of that, this is the time now to say, okay, this is what a future Labor agenda is going to be like. If the factions are playing a role in conducting that, great. If party issues and party management and party reform is about that, then great. If this period of opposition simply becomes about the spores of opposition or about us talking about ourselves or our own structures, then we are going to be in a long opposition. And what worries me more than just being in opposition isn't just being, you know, we will eventually be back in government. That's the political cycle. The Labor Party will survive. Of course it will. But we have to also be asking ourselves those two important questions. Firstly, how do we get back into power? And secondly, why do we want to be in power?
Will you take a major role in the right faction? Are you aiming to become a convener?
No, well, look, I hold no positions at the moment in kind of an organisational sense.
But aspirations?
No, look, I don't have aspirations for that. I was really lucky. I got to be party secretary. I got to play that role. I've moved on from that. And I think I really want to, and I can't just say, I think that, you know, I want to play a role in this shaping where we go, in this shaping this quality of life argument. And I know I'm going to have a fight on my hands in the Labor Party doing that. That's more than enough to bite off.
On one issue which has been exercising politicians and non-politicians, particularly in recent months, the gay marriage issue, do you think that the Labor Party should be bringing forward a private member's bill sooner rather than later on that issue?
Look, I don't know about the specifics. I mean, my view on that's been on the record before. Look, I've been a supporter of marriage equality, but I very strongly support the principle that we need to be a big enough party. There'll be people in the Labor Party that support it. There'll be people in the Labor Party that oppose it. In terms of the particular tactics, I think that's kind of secondary. And I think that I think there'll be a debate about that, and I'll let others who know more about parliamentary tactics talk about that.
And if it does come forward, do you think the Labor Party should have a bound vote or a free vote?
Absolutely not. I think we should have a free vote on it, and I think the Conservatives should as well. We have to accept that as a Labor Party, there are people in the Labor Party that support it. There are people in the Labor Party that oppose it. That's good. That's a healthy development. That's a healthy place for us to be in as ideologically as a movement. This idea that we're all going to have the same view on an issue like that at one point in time isn't really realistic, and I don't think it's healthy. Where we will go, you know, but again, Michelle, you know, if, you know, I said if I'm a supporter of marriage equality, but if the next 3 years are us just talking about marriage equality and talking about party reform and talking about a couple of these issues and not talking about these pressures that people are under, then, you know, we can have the best positions we want in the world. We're not going to be in power, and we're not going to have a reason to be in power.
Just finally, the New South Wales right has always seemed like one large family, everyone related to everyone else. I note that your father-in-law is Peter Barron, who, of course, was a political advisor and a great tactician in the Hawke era in particular.
A brilliant man. I would say that, though.
In terms of political tactics often, no doubt. What advice has he given you that's been especially relevant?
Peter's advice, and Peter is one of the those of you listeners and that who don't know him, is probably one of the, and I say this in jest, but one of the original kind of faceless men, and one of the people who actually back in the day before faceless men used to have spots on Sky News, but one of the kind of genuine backroom operators, is brilliant strategist. And look, his view is this, and his view of the Labor Party has always been this: you have to be able to win the debate out there in the community. You have to win the debate out there in the community. And just give you one example. Foreign aid. I'm a big supporter of foreign aid. You know, I was born in, a country. And when I was born, you know, the country that was in war, we came to Australia in 88 in the middle of a war. I'm obviously very, very sympathetic, to something like foreign aid. But what do we do wrong? You know, $4.5 billion looks like it's got cut out of the forward estimates of future budgets, and no one in the community kind of jumped up and down, and there wasn't the outroar. Why? Because we didn't go out there and win the case in the public. Peter's advice always is this: you can't rely on numbers, you can't rely on power, you have to go out there and win the case in the community. And when you win the case in the community, you're unstoppable. And there's a lesson in that for the future of the Labor Party, for our ideology, and for our values.
Sam Dastyari, thank you very much for
talking to us. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That was Sam Dastyari. And that's all for now. You can subscribe to this podcast by your chosen client. If you're listening on iTunes or on the Windows Phone Store, please leave a rating and a comment. Thanks to my producer, Matt Dawson. You can read me on The Conversation or follow me on Twitter. Thanks for listening.